Motion caught his attention. Tensoon turned, surprised to see Varcel and several other large fifths approaching his cage, their quartzite stone true bodies ominous in size and coloring. Time already, Tensoon thought. With the blessing of presence, he was able to mentally recount the days of his imprisonment. It was nowhere near time. He frowned, noting that one of the fifths carried a large sack. For a moment, Tensoon had a flash of panic as he pictured them towing him away inside the sack. It looked filled already, however. Dared he hope? Days had passed since his conversation with Milan, and while she had returned several times to look at him, they had not spoken. He'd almost forgotten his words to her, said in the hope that they would be overheard by the minions of the second generation. Varcel opened the cage and tossed the sack in. It clinked with a familiar sound. Bones.
You are to wear those to the trial, Varcel said, leaning down and putting a translucent face up next to Tensoon's bars. Orders of the second generation.
What is wrong with the bones I now wear? Tensoon asked carefully, pulling over the sack, uncertain whether to be excited or ashamed.
They intend to break your bones as part of your punishment, Varcel said, smiling. Something like a public execution, but where the prisoner lives through the process. It's a simple thing, I know, but the display ought to leave an impression on some of the younger generations.
Tensoon's stomach twisted. Chandra could reform their bodies, true, but they felt pain just as acutely as any human. It would take quite a severe beating to break his bones, and with the blessing of presence, there would be no release of unconsciousness for him. I still don't see the need for another body, Tensoon said, pulling out one of the bones.
No need to waste a perfectly good set of human bones, third, Varcel said, slamming the cage door closed. I'll be back for your current bones in a few hours.
The leg bone he pulled out was not that of a human, but a dog, a large wolfhound. It was the very body Tensoon had been wearing when he'd returned to the homeland over a year before. He closed his eyes, holding the smooth bone in his fingers. A week ago he'd spoken of how much he despised these bones, hoping that the second generation's spies would carry the news back to their masters. The second generation was far more traditional than Milan, and even she had found the thought of wearing a dog's body distasteful. To the seconds, forcing Tensoon to wear an animal's body would be supremely degrading. That was exactly what Tensoon had been counting on.
You look good wearing that, Varcel said, standing to leave. When your punishment comes, everyone will be able to see you for what you really are. No Chandra would break his contract.
Tensoon rubbed the thigh bone with a reverent finger, listening to Varcel's laughter. The fifth had no way of knowing that he'd just given Tensoon the means he needed to escape. The balance. Is it real? We've almost forgotten this little bit of lore. Scar used to talk about it before the collapse. Philosophers discussed it a great deal in the third and fourth centuries. But by Kelsier's time, it was mostly a forgotten topic. But it was real. There was a physiological difference between Scar and nobility. When the Lord Ruler altered mankind to make them more capable of dealing with Ash, he changed other things as well. Some groups of people, the noblemen, were created to be less fertile, but taller, stronger, and more intelligent. Others, the Ska, were made to be shorter, hardier, and to have many children. The changes were slight, however, and after 1,000 years of interbreeding, the differences had largely been erased.
25. Phadrix City, Elland said, standing in his customary place near the narrow boat's prow. Ahead, the broad Conway Canal, the primary canal route to the west, continued into the distance, turning to the northwest. To Ellen's left, the ground rose in a broken incline, forming a set of steep rock formations. He could see them rising much higher in the distance. Closer to the canal, however, a broad city was nestled in the very center of a large group of rock formations. The deep red and orange rocks were the type left behind when the wind and rain wore away weaker sections of stone, and many of them reached high, like spires. Others formed jagged, hedge-like barriers, like stacks of enormous blocks that had been fused together, reaching some 30 and 40 feet into the air. Elland could barely see the tips of the city's buildings over the stone formations. Phadrix had no formal city wall, of course. Only Luthadel had been allowed one of those. But the rising rocks around the city formed a set of terrace-like natural fortifications. Elland had been to the city before. His father had made certain to introduce him in all of the Final Empire's main cultural centers. Phadrix hadn't been one of those, but it had been on the way to Tremredare, once known as the capital of the West. In forging his new kingdom, however, Set had ignored Tremredare, instead establishing his capital in Phadrix. A clever move, in Ellen's estimation. Phadrix was smaller, more defensible, and had been a major supply station for numerous canal routes.
"The city looks different from the last time I was here," Ellen said.
"Trees," Ham said, standing beside him. "Phadrix used to have trees growing on the rocky shelves and plateaus."
Ham glanced at him.
"They're ready for us. They cut down the trees to provide a better killing field, and to keep us from sneaking up close."
Elland nodded.
"Look down there."
Ham squinted, though it obviously took him a moment to pick out what Ellen's tin-enhanced eyes had noticed. On the northern side of the city, the one closest to the main canal route, the rock terraces and shelves fell down into a natural canyon. Perhaps 20 feet across, it was the only way into the city, and the defenders had cut